This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
In wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete. I'm with Timothy, man. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Oh, same old. Got some good-ish news. Bola tickets went on sale. I didn't get them myself, but my good friend Chris from Devil's Run, nice band, kind of metal band coming out of Las Vegas. If you're into that stuff, check them out because their music is actually really good. Just had his baby, just got done with tour, and decided that he was going to figure out a way to make it out for Bola. So he got me some tickets for night one and night three. Unfortunately, no night two, which was actually the night I wanted to go to the most. So hopefully I don't miss that. Hopefully someone comes through for me on that. And
these are the inflated ticket prices ones?
Yep, insanely high price ticket price at $85 a pop, but you know what, I'm just going to bite the bullet and go for it. Hopefully I get night two so I can see Walter. That's my big thing. I mean, he'll probably be on night three either way, but I'd like to see him in singles action, and that's not guaranteed on night three, because who knows, maybe Walter ends up in the big 10-man tag with the thumb in the bump spots. You never know with PWG. And then after that, some more good news. The Pritchard Show is coming to Los Angeles in late September, so gonna go check out that live podcast, I think, here. Gonna buy some tickets, hopefully quickly before they sell out. Probably do that in between recording here with you right now. Go check that out. So I got some cool stuff going on this summer for me personally. But that's cool.
I heard Conrad isn't doing the tours anymore.
Oh, I have no idea. I would assume that he is. I mean, he talks on the podcast like he's going, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe someone else fills in for him.
Yeah, I heard he refuses to do them anymore for some reason. Or it's not worth the flying. It's not worth it for him anymore is what it was. I guess he had some bad experiences flying and stuff.
Huh. Well, we'll see, I guess. Yeah. Either way, maybe it'll be someone else. Maybe it won't live up to the podcast experience, but it'll be its own experience.
Yeah, so I have some cool stuff, too. I have my hero, Ricky Steamboat's coming to San Antonio in September, so I'm gonna go talk to him. I'm a huge Steamboat mark, so super excited about that. Scenic City, I'll be there next week at this time next week. Really excited about going there, mixing in with the hardcores along with the Tennessee faithful there. I'm expecting a super exciting tournament with a wickedly hot crowd, so I can't put over enough how excited I am going to be out there, staying with my buddy Ben, looking really forward to it and stuff, and stuff like that. And then I was at Russell Circus last week. I've been to every show of theirs. Let me talk to you, Tim, about pro PWG, because it feels like Russell Circus is trying to turn into like a PWG light, where they have a lot of the major talents, but they don't get like Ricochet every show type of thing. We've only had Ricochet once, but you know, like Ricochet is a PWG stalwart where he's like almost on all the shows, the Young Bucks, etc. When you get your PWG tickets, are they assigned seats, or is it first come, first serve? How does that work?
So there's front row, which gets a separate line, and they get to go in first. Then seated tickets go in, and then after that it's the standing room only in a separate line. But no assigned seating. You just kind of get your seats. But if you go long enough, you kind of start to get the hang of things. I've complained about it. There is an issue with people, let's say, they get front row seats and then they're saving the seat behind them for someone who's in the regular seats section. It's a little, there's some hinky business going on, but no assigned seating.
So, okay, because like a lot of, I don't want to say like a lot, but I'd say most indie shows, they have like, Evolve, you actually have an assigned seat for or if you go to a lot of indie shows, they you'll see them on shows where you'll see a little like a post-it on a chair, and usually they'll have your name on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I've been to enough places that have that. I've seen that.
Okay.
Seen that one before.
Here at Russell Circus, you know, I think it's first front row is $50, second row is $40, third row is third, general admission is $20, and then there's like a standing room, whatever. Okay. And then they also do this VIP meet and greet. There's no assigned seats on anything. And that's always $20. I always buy it, and it's not so I can hobnob with the wrestlers or what have you. But I always get it so I want to get the seat I want, so I want to get in there first. And so it doesn't matter if you get there early. And so in the past, the meet and greet had looked like they were getting like 150 to 200 people there, and which is fine, but I would still always get there, and I'd be able to pick out. I always like to sit on the end of a row so to give me more space. So I always buy that ticket. This last show, Russell Circus has been putting on some long shows. This last show, I think they might have had 40 people in this VIP thing. Because the shows have gone so long, I believe that they have killed their VIP business. Do you know why? Because the shows are going long, and then the shows start at 6. The VIP thing starts at 4 o'clock. So if you're there, if you're just even if you showed up normally and you're going to a 4.5 hour show, tack on an additional 2 hours. When if you get into the building early, because these shows have run so long, I think they're losing money on their VIPs because people don't want to be there so goddamn long anymore. Do you think that's a very valid possibility?
Oh yeah. I mean, if I went and I got super burnt out by being there too long, I'm not going to be in the mood to go wait that much longer. I totally think that you're right about that.
Yeah, and the reason I had always got it because there was always a lot of people getting it, and so I wanted to get my seat. I didn't want to have to, you know, because when I started getting the first or second row, but then I'm like, yeah, I'll just start getting general admission. You see, great anyway, it saved me a couple bucks. But actually, I was like, because I'm following the company because they're in locally. I want to support them. And it's just wacky that they have killed their VIP business because their shows have gone so long. And I don't even know if they realize that. I mean, maybe people bought it all and no one showed up because they realized how long it was. But from seeing the faces there, I was shocked how I walked in like 5 after 4, maybe 10 after 4, and there was no line. I'm like, whoa. Usually I'll show up like 20 after 4 and there's still a line to get in for the VIP. Here it was in and out, going straight in, and there might have been 20 or 30 people, well, maybe 40 people in the pre-gaming thing. So I think they've essentially ran off their VIP business because they're running the shows too long. With that said, I was there. I didn't make it through the show. I got kind of angry with some of the booking. I think the company needs to bring somebody in, and I don't think it should be one of the boys. I think they need to find somebody from the outside. I don't know who, but I mean, you have somebody or somebody who you're not really booking on the show. Like I felt maybe Lance Hoyt or Archer would have been a great sounding board. Or anybody for that matter, even if it is one of the boys. But I'm not big on having one of the boys helping me book and stuff. I don't think that's good for business in the long run. But I think he needs to find somebody who could bounce ideas off of. And let Al be the final decision maker. But the structuring of the card, I just was just baffled with. We opened up with a returning Lance Archer, which he kayfabed me. I was asking how the injury was. And then all of a sudden, he makes a surprise appearance and destroys Steve Areno. Steve Areno deserves a lot better than just being the setup guy for Lance Archer's return. Maybe he's somebody that Lance wanted to work with, who we knew he could who can make him look good, who can protect him. But you've seen Steve work. He's a guy who should be on a main show, don't you think?
Not just a main show, but in a prominent role. I mean, we were watching him in Inspire, and he's a guy that they can build their whole company around in a way that's believable, having top flight matches with internationally known and recognized talent.
Yes, and he's done it with local guys, too, had really strong matches. So it's just having him debut on Wrestle Circus like this is a jobber, essentially. Just kind of like, you know, it's just short-sighted. Because, I've always said, yeah, you can run these big super indies, but, man, you got to protect some of your local talent. And he's one of the better ones around. And then to use him in that form, I thought was really essentially short-sighted. And then the next match was MGF versus Leo Rush. And really good match. MGF is a really good heel. Sometimes I think he should be a little bit more vicious. Sometimes he's a little too comedic. But at least he's going for it and trying to be a heel. And then Leo Rush was Leo Rush. He got a good shine. I liked MGF working over Rush's bad arm. But then, and essentially it's the second match, but really it's the opener because the Lance thing was just like kind of a pop. And mind you, I want to say Lance Archer blew the roof off the place on his return. People were happy to see him. So that's cool. But MGF essentially here, he does teases a fake injury, knee injury. To open up your show, that feels like something more you should save, not right off the bat. And it kind of took me out of the match, and I was like, wow, it's a little early in the show already to do like a swerve like that. But I thought his heat segment was well done. I hate the playoff of the Flair HBK super kick spot. They did that here. I think it's why. Do it. I mean, I didn't like it in Flair HBK, and I sure in hell don't like homages or making fun of it either, because it doesn't do it for me in the match. Felt the match was a little long. Still enjoyed it. 2 3/4. Then our next match was Mecha Wolf, who was the former Mr. 450, versus Ethan Page. Okay, now this is what I'm talking about. These two guys, MGF is a good heel. Ethan Page is a good heel. I would never, ever, ever book them back-to-back in back-to-back matches. Their act is way too similar. They're both guys who go for the heat, who mix heat and comedy, and it just doesn't work that way for me. Would you ever book these two guys back-to-back?
Not when you essentially have a card where they're going to be the only real heat getters on the whole thing. Like, right. True heat getters. And MGF, probably perfect spot for him in the opener to establish him as a new guy, going over a guy that everybody knows in Texas at this point, Leo Rush, who's on his way out. Probably get him the win. I don't care how. The super kick thing is stupid, but whatever. Get him a win. I would have him go over cheating or somewhere shitty. And then I would have Ethan Page in your top spot as the established heel. But yeah, back-to-back, I mean... Okay, so theoretically, if indie wrestling was the way it should be, every match would have a good heel in it. But when you've only got two good heels, don't put them back to back at the start of the show.
And I will say, actually, we have a few good ones here. Scorpio Sky being another one, and they have him now. He's actually in the third match, so essentially. You had essentially your three best heels in the group. The only other good heel left was Morrison, who wrestled later on in the
show. Oh, God.
So you burnt through your three heels right off the bat. And after the Scorpio Sky match, I ended up leaving the show. I was pretty upset with why would you open up with these three guys. And but I still watched the match show on VOD, so I'm gonna give it a proper review. But the coolest thing is I ran into Tully Blanchard outside and got his autograph, so it's not all a bad thing that I paid money and I was so dang angry. And after the Leo Rush and Archer match, we're already an hour into the show. And so I'm like, I don't want to be here all freaking day. I want to explain. On Saturday, I work Saturdays. I go in, I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm at work at 5 in the morning. So I'm up early. And yes, that's my fault if I'm going to go to a wrestling show. But I don't want to go to a wrestling show when it's ending at 11 o'clock at night where I've been up for 17, 18 hours, you know.
Yeah, and I'm just going to quickly say here that shout out to AWS and Bart out here in Southgate, but you watched 4 matches and the main event was Scorpio Sky. It sounds like you were at a SoCal indie show.
Yeah, there we go. So we get Mecha Wolf and Ethan Page, and I'm like, what the hell is a Mecha Wolf? I guess I know it's his new gimmick, but I guess it's you're the top wolf or the top dog in the pack. I don't know. I enjoyed Paige with some fun mic work. There was some fun crowd interaction spots. Paige hurts Wolf's back. Paige revenge crowd spot was really good. But again, it was in a tough spot, and I gave it like a 3/4. I tweeted about my same point, and Ethan Page, on Twitter, jokes. He goes, thirded. You know, he doesn't even really understand why in the hell you would book MGF and Ethan Page in back-to-back matches. Because it's, it's just mind-blowing to me. Then we get Scorpio Sky, who, is turning into, like, the best heel in the company. And I think they had the perfect opponent for him in ACH, because the next month, and here's again, you have Scorpio Sky, in the third match, he's main eventing against Cody Rhodes next month. So why do you have him in such a low priority position here if he's gonna supposed to draw money against Cody Rhodes next month? And you position him as an afterthought again, like as the third match of the card. I think ACH is the perfect opponent for him because you could, but they screwed it up, and no one mentioned anything about ACH being the supposed king of Texas, blah blah blah. And after Scorpio Sky beats him, he should be talking about how I just whipped the king of Texas, and now the lowly prince has come back to Texas next month. I'm going to whip his ass. You know, he should have been doing something to that effect, playing up the Texas angle. I think they had no clue what they were on money here, where they could have played up the whole Texas pride angle here with the ACH. I think they just made ACH his opponent. I mean, if they did with the insightfulness of connecting the Texas to Texas, they did a horrible job following up on it then. So I'm going to go under the assumption they never even connected the two, I don't think. What do you think?
I mean, probably not. And from what I've seen from Wrestle Circus, they don't use ACH to the full of his ability that they can. There's very few guys in Wrestle Circus that are getting used, honestly, to the fullness of their potential. I think the only guy who comes close to Scorpio Sky, and I think that has a lot to do with his involvement with Kevin Condren and the United Wrestling Network, CWF Hollywood and Championship Wrestling from Arizona, and that whole group really focusing on getting their stuff over and their relationships with CZW. That's why they're so committed to getting their guys over and having a clear plan and what they're doing with their guys in every different federation, because that's their plan. While the rest of the guys in Wrestle Circus are haphazard. I hate to say it, but even Sammy Guevara at the top of the card as the champion, I don't feel like Wrestle Circus really uses him to the best of his ability either. So,
well,
yeah.
It's actually Shane Strickland's the champ.
Oh, is he the champion now? Okay, yeah, you're right. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. And we'll touch on that in a bit.
But yeah, I don't think anybody in Wrestle Circus is really used to the height of their potential, honestly, except for Scorpio Sky.
Yeah, so they have this. He's booked for a high profile match next month, and it's they barely touch on it. They don't really even give them really much mic time. And that's the other thing. This company runs monthly, okay? They need to make the shows more more episodic, where we're getting promos and stuff to build to future matches. And then, yeah, good, because they don't have the time to do it because they have they're already going long. But now eliminate some of the matches. Good. Allow a guy to go out there and talk for 2 minutes. I don't need him to talk 20 minutes. I just need a quick 2-3 minute promo. Hit on it, which could have been them, could have been Conrad running down Texas, how they whooped ACH's ass, and now the crown prince, son of a plumber, the son, the prodigal son returns to Austin, and they could have built up that basic, easy angle, and they totally didn't even acknowledge it, which is mind-blowing to me. And the match wasn't even, it was just there, 2 stars. Both guys kind of didn't seem like they're really into it. ACH in particular. But I'll tell you, Kevin Condren's working his ass off on the outside. Then we get Sammy Guevara versus Flip Gordon. I've said this before, Sammy needs to drop that flip spot. He crashed and burned on it again here. They did a lot of cool moves. It was lacking something. A lot of your turn, my turn stuff. Sammy Leaping German was incredible, though. Still, it was only 2.5 stars. It didn't seem like, again, and a part of it's what they've done to Guevara. Guevara's a natural heel, but the fans, he has, like, easily has a huge fan following, and they cheer him. And even though he's working hard to be a heel, they've turned him into this, like, tweener. And so it almost, I don't know. It just doesn't totally work for me. Then we get this scramble match. Bunch of spots. I mean, some incredible spots. And again, I will tell you, scramble matches are fine if you're like a Ring of Honor or a WWE, if you're trying to get people on a show. But how many scramble matches does WWE put on their undercard? Not much. And I'm not saying WWE is the be-all, end-all of wrestling, because it's not. But they know how to draw money, and it's not to put a bunch of people on the mid card to throw a shitload of high spots at people, and where it makes it almost impossible for people to follow it, because in a scramble there's no real true structure here. You just have people coming in and out, hitting high spots, hitting interesting moves, doing fun stuff, and it was fun. 3 stars. But I think it's such a detriment to your card to have scramble matches when it's just so high spot oriented. If you look at our review of CWF Mid-Atlantic when they had their scramble match, it was to establish new talent a couple weeks ago. And then in the main event when they had that big schmoz with a bunch of people, it was all detailed storytelling. So, I mean, again, you might need some help just crafting it. I want this promotion to be great. I appreciate them bringing in the top talent, but it's just frustrating to throw that out there. And it just hurts the rest of the match. It makes it so much harder to follow this match. And, but then afterwards we get a great piece of business. And I'm going to have to say, my guess would be this felt like this had Sammy Callahan's fingerprints all over it. And I'll ask your opinion after I describe it to you. But it was a great angle. Callahan comes out, and in the scramble match, Leva Bates is dressed as Callahan, okay? So he comes out and just beats the crap out of her after the scramble match. He starts running down Russell Circus and saying how indie wrestling runs through him. The only reason Jordan Lennox is the champion of the PW Revolver Scramble champion is because he's Al's brother, and that means money, that means bucks. And so he's just trashing everyone, trashing Russell Circus. Shane Strickland comes out as the champion, defends Russell Circus's honor. Callahan throws chairs at him, and Strickland snatches both of them out of the air. Super cool. Strickland comes across right there. Strickland came across as more of a top guy than I've ever seen him. He came across as a big time walking tall babyface. And at the end of that promo, the people should have been wanting to lynch fucking Sami Callihan for disrespecting our company that we paid money to come see. Does this sound like a Sami Callihan fingerprint promo and angle?
Yeah, and I mean, from what I heard, it's done like super shoot style. He's calling out Lennox. I didn't get a chance to watch it, even though I did see it posted online. I just didn't get around to it. But yeah, that sounds like Sammy kind of pushing the borders. And I saw someone jokingly say, you know, Sami Callihan has completely taken over indie wrestling right now, and he's kind of the Triple H of the indie scene. And maybe the reason why he actually left NXT is that he is actually Triple H's sleeper cell, and he's here to take over the indies, because he's got his finger in every pie. He's running creative in a lot of different places, and you can definitely smell his angles, and you can see his touches on a lot of different stuff right now.
Yeah, and it screamed it out, but I'll tell you, I mean, Strickland came across as a major top guy based on the angle, and you know what? That's what you want out of your dang top champion in the promotion, so that was good. And they have a match booked for later on. Now, originally it was supposed to be Strickland versus Cage, because Strickland cashed in with his Money in the Bank last month and won the title. Cage ends up having to go to Japan, so that match gets canceled, and they slide Callihan in. On the last show, Callihan loses in a mixed tag. Is that the guy who really should be challenging for the belt at that point?
Tim? I mean, obviously not. I mean,
right.
But it was, I guess it wasn't the plan. It was supposed to be Cage, all this, I understand.
Yes,
but
right.
You got to take that into account when you then book it. I mean, I just was kind of giving some praise to Callihan. I like Callihan, but Callihan is not, he's not that guy. You know, he's really not that guy that can be instantly credible with one big promo and an angle. I mean, I think it takes protective booking, and it takes long-term commitment for me to see Callihan as a top-level guy. I mean, it took a lot in AAW, personally, for me to take Callihan seriously as their champion.
And you know what? An easy fix would have been, honestly, because Strickland pins Cage. And originally the match was Cage and Guevara, and he cashes in on those guys and pins Cage. Well, Guevara never got pinned in his title chance. To me, that would have been an easy guy to slide into the match, not Callihan, because Guevara could say, well, I got screwed out of my title opportunity, blah, blah, blah. You never pinned me, and the time we did face one-on-one, I did beat you. You owe me a shot. I mean, right there, he has a lot more credibility in this company and a lot more and has an actual case for the being in the main event, not Sami Callihan after a loss on a mixed tag match. So it's like they're bringing in talent without a real rhyme or reason to it. And so we're there. So we go to a commercial, not commercial, we go to our intermission after the Callihan promo. And it opens up with Dijak and Morrison. And I thought they had a lackluster match, about 2.5 stars. I enjoyed the shirt stick where they kept on throwing Morrison's shirt into the crowd, and the crowd kept on throwing it back like it was a Wrigley Fields baseball home run that the opponents hit. But yeah, they just, you know, it was an okay match. Nothing wrong with it. And then they follow up with Roppongi Vice versus the Lucha Brothers. These guys had the best match on the show, 4 stars. Crowd was totally into this. They viewed this as a big-time dream match. I'm not sure how many times these guys have worked each other. I can't imagine too many. You know, you have the Lucha Brothers who are over in Texas. They're over because of Lucha Underground, and they've gotten a huge following on the indie scene. Roppongi Vice is viewed as a big act because they don't do that many indies in a way. I mean, they're viewed big time based off of New Japan. They've been the New Japan junior tag belt champions, what, 4 times, 3 times or something? So they have credibility. And people viewed this as a big time match. Crowd totally into it. Phoenix did this one spot. It defied physics. It was incredible. started slow, but it built and built into this incredible hot action-packed match. You could complain there might have been a little bit more your turn, my turn, but man, I thought the match all ruled. I give it 4 stars. Then, again, I will get back to booking again. If they follow up with another tag match, we have 2 tag matches on this show. Why the hell would you put them up back to back?
One of them is for the tag titles.
Yes, that one went on first. And then the next one, yeah. The next one was the comedy tag match of Jervis Cottonbelly and Christy James versus Colt Cabana and Delilah Doom. They put a comedy match almost 3 hours and 45 minutes into the show.
God damn, man. I'm sorry. I listened to the Kevin Sullivan podcast, which I assume you probably don't. And he talks about modern wrestling being so different than where wrestling came from. And the stuff that I pay attention to and the stuff that I like, I always kind of go, what's he talking about? That's not true. But I don't pay attention to this. And then I see this and what you're talking about. And I'm like, yeah, this is not wrestling like it used to be at all.
No, not at all. I would never have. And maybe I'm just out of touch. I enjoy the current product. So I can't be that out of touch. But I think there's certain rules you shouldn't break. I mean, if you only have 2 tag matches on the show, they shouldn't be back to back. I'll tell you that much. Kind of takes away the novelty of a tag match if you do them back to back. And of course, this was perfectly fine. This crowd, totally into Jervis and totally into everybody here. It was a fun for what it was, but again, terrible placement on the card. We get the reveal of why the trainees are beating up Jervis Cottonbelly, and it's revealed it's the ref, Austin, who gets booed just for the hell of it by all the fans. And so the fans actually love this angle. There they go. And for what it was, for me, it goes under the comedy angle because it's with Jervis. I thought it was pretty damn funny because I'm like, man, this guy just gets booed. I would do something with him, like in a manager role, so at least make the heat, at least where it's not hurting the fucking matches, because he's getting booed out of the fucking building. He's getting more heat. Where, I mean, we've talked where they've had him referee comedy matches, and the comedy workers are doing comedy spots with him, but they're booing him, and then they're getting the completely wrong reaction because the crowd hates this guy so much. Well, most of the time the comedy spot would work, but it doesn't work with this guy because of how much crowd hates him and stuff. But it was pretty damn funny, so it worked. But again, it's such a C-level angle. It sure in hell doesn't mean to be here late in the show. Okay, it needs to be. This match should have worse been the second match on your card. Okay. Ugh. Now we get the no DQ match of Strickland and Callahan. Crowd is totally dead for this match. These guys are after such a hot angle. They get like this really lukewarm response. Strickland's gotten great responses every time he's been here. And this is probably the worst response he's gotten since he's been on these shows. And it's because they didn't work this blow-away high-spot offensive match. They worked a realistically, I fucking hate you brawl. And the crowd, it was A, dead for it because of how long we're at, like probably about 4 hours in right now into the show. Or it's not the match they wanted to see out of these two guys. Or And then Wrestle Circus has done a bad job overall because all they've done is they've put on supercards and they haven't built a grudge to where people should care about who wins and losses. And I could tell this crowd didn't give a shit who won or lost. And that's a bad thing. If you're just coming to see great matches, that's not fair to the performers or to the promotion. Because wrestling is like, you know, like if you look at NXT and CWF, they do these little vignettes and stuff, so we end up caring about the person and the act, and we don't tune in to CWF because Trevor Lee's wrestling. We're tuning in to CWF because we want to see Trevor win or lose. Like an example, when he wrestled the brawler. What's his name? I can't even believe I'm drawing a blank right now.
Cutshaw or Chip Day or
the one who I believe was just recently the local guy.
Nick Richards.
Yeah, sorry. The crowd wanted to see Nick Richards win that match. It was obvious. The crowd, even though Trevor Lee is the number one babyface in that company, Richards is the number two. And they wanted to see a changing of the guard, in a way, by the reaction I saw from that match, because they cared about who won or lost. Here, they didn't give a shit. Even off this hot angle, they did not care who won or lost. So these guys are brawling all over the place. They did a couple dives early, which were, they looked like they were like hate-filled dives. So they worked in a sense. They're brawling. It felt like this is about a street fight. These guys are brawling all over the arena. Callahan's throwing wicked chair shots to Strickland's arm. They're brawling out into the concession area. The guys, and then down the stretch, after all these fucking nasty moves, they start working submissions. And it's telling a story because, like, Callahan's fucking up. They're switching, countering Fujiwaras and stuff, and pays into it because these guys were whacking each other's arms with fucking chairs. The crowd's dead. Either A, again, like, for example, when Seidel hooked on a few weeks, months back, hooked on a grounded freaking Cobra Clutch of the guy behind me's going, that's a rest hold. You dumb fuck. It's not a rest hold. What these guys were doing was hate-filled. They wanted to win. They wanted to win in the best way possible by the other guy tapping out because it was personal. They made this a personal blood feud, and the crowd didn't know what the hell to do. Or they were just burnt out. So, just really frustrating that these guys go and do that. And so they end up wasting this great angle to get a lukewarm response on a blood on a hell of a brawl. I only gave it 3 stars because the crowd just didn't react to it. And it's because they didn't give a shit who won. And I think they'd rather see a fucking high spot. Because on Twitter, the thing I saw the most out of was that Revolver Scramble match was the best. Well, because there was just a shitload of high spots. And then the main event was Rachel Ellering, Tessa Blanchard. Again, they had a fun wrestling match. I thought Tessa was really good here. I thought Rachel was really good. Again, the crowd was dead for it. They got a little bit of reaction, but I felt bad that these girls were main eventing and they deserved better, but not at the 4 hour and 45 minute clip. Show ends. They need help with their booking. They bring in, I have no problem with not one piece of this talent I have a problem with on this show. I think all of them are good in their way, own way. My only one problem would be Leva. We don't need her. She's not a good worker. The cosplay, it runs its course, and I think it's done. It's kind of like having like the Four Horsemen in 1999. It just doesn't work. And of course, they just need some help booking. I mean, do I seem overly negative on the show, or am I or do you think I have valid points here?
Sounds like all valid points. It's hard.
And I know you haven't seen the show, so I mean, it's not really fair to put you in that position.
That was literally the next thing that was going to come out of my mouth. It's hard for me to judge having not watched the show, but it does sound like valid points where you're coming from. There's a lot of issues. I mean, you wouldn't have to describe anything to me if you just told me the order of the matches, how they were booked, I would question it quite a bit. Me and Quentin just did a review that will probably come out in about a week of some Attack shows, and I talked about how the Attack show had like three or four tag team matches on one show that only has about five matches, and they're spread out, but that company's built around tag team matches. So they have, you know, they have a lot of tag team matches, they have a lot of trios matches, they have tag team matches back-to-back that tell totally different stories, have totally different styles. When you're a company that doesn't have a strong tag division, that isn't built around a lot of tag team matches, to have the only two tag team matches that you have on the show, with this many matches on the card already, back-to-back, is ridiculous. I mean, it just really, that's it. Like, from there, there's a lot of other problems. You know what's a problem to me is you've got all this turmoil with the championship. You've got the champion out of town or the challenger out of town because of Japanese commitments. You throw in a new challenger who just lost last month in a mixed tag where a guy who's obviously going to WWE soon is just having fun wrestling with his girlfriend before he goes and makes real money. So the guy feels like he's just in a nothing spot. Then he challenges for the title the next fucking month. Right, you got all this going on, and then what do? Is on the top of the card, you put the women in the main event when me and you have said they deserve that spot, but when it feels like a consolation, when it feels like, oh shit, we had to shuffle the card, now this is the main event, then it does the same thing. It makes it feel less special. So I'm just, in my mind, I'm like, god damn, how do you take a positive and make it bad, but Wrestle Circus did it. So, like, congratulations to them on that. But yeah, it sounds, this promotion had some really high highs to start out with, and now it feels like it's circling down the drain. I got into a conversation with someone earlier who said that they're shocked at how much hate there is for Wrestle Circus online, and that there's so much that they question it to the point where they think that Wrestle Circus itself is the one that's creating fake accounts on Twitter that are intentionally made just to fuck with Wrestle Circus, just to drum up intrigue in the company. That's, like, insane. But
yeah.
Because of Wrestle Circus and because of the way their business has gone and because of how they act on social media and because of, you know, certain people that are involved in the company, it doesn't sound like it's completely not plausible. It sounds like that actually could be what's happening, and it's just, it's troubling. So I completely agree with you. The company is, I mean, just questionable at best at this point. And I really think that they need to understand sometimes less is more, as stupid as that sounds, but you're not super serving the customer by giving them all these extra matches when even a hardcore fan who's been coming since day one is getting to the point where he can't sit through your show because your show has just got too much going on.
Oh yeah, and we don't even talk about it, and there's always at least one or two matches on a pre-show that are dark.
Yeah, it's just, this is ridiculous. Like, honestly, someone needs to kind of get their house in order.
Yeah, that's what I said. You need to bring a booker in I'm all for Al having the final decision, but man, have somebody who can bounce ideas off you who will fucking tell you, no, that's a terrible fucking idea, Al. Jordan, no, that's a terrible fucking idea. I heard on Twitter at one point they wanted to do a show where they announce talent but don't tell anybody what the matches are. That's a fucking horrible idea. So far, I'm glad they haven't fucking done it. Who in the fuck would go to a car just one? I mean, I would find that fucking insulting. I just couldn't imagine going to a show where I don't know at least half the card. But I know the talent, but I don't know who in the hell they're wrestling.
Well, I've gone to, I think, three different PWG shows where I didn't know the card, but
okay.
That's PWG.
And they have a history.
You know what to expect at this point because they've been going for 14 years strong.
Exactly. I mean, I just, after watching that, I've been watching some more while looking at other indies, and I'm beginning to think, though I think in a lot of indie wrestling, it's not about building things I'm glad they're supposedly going to cut back, and they're episodic. They run monthly. There should be a lot more. I'm not saying they need to have tons of promos, but we should get a couple promos a show, drumming up matches for next month or running angles or something, because they do use a lot of the same core talent. Like, I think Scorpio Sky has been on almost every show. ACH has been on a shitload of their shows. Rachel Ellering has been on a ton of their shows. Tessa Blanchard has been on a ton of their shows. Dirty Andy Dalton's been on a lot of their shows. Jordan Lennox obviously has been on every show. Shane Strickland's been on almost every show. I mean, so Callahan's been on a lot of their shows. So, I mean, they obviously have access to a certain core amount of people where they should be running angles to building up matches and or promos or something instead of just giving us a cold buffet. They're a promotion. If they want to go to the next step, I mean, it's maybe that's my – I just think you need – if you're going to run monthly, you should have something that connects it. I mean, just running – ooh, super matches. It's just I don't think you need more because the marketplace is a lot. I mean, hell, he's I know Al's close to the Inspire Pro booker. Ask him for his opinion. You know, I mean, I guarantee you, he'd be more than happy to bounce ideas off with you. I bet. I just think they need a lot of help in their booking, and obviously discipline. Because they don't, it seems like they don't have it. And it's funny, you know, like Jordan Lennox's girlfriend was online and was complaining about how long the shows are. Well, you know what? If you cut off two of the matches, especially a scramble match when you're booking 10 people, guess what? You've made a lot more money. You're making more money. Right?
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I mean,
isn't the whole goal to make money? And, I mean, yeah, I know his plan wasn't at first to make money, but you know what? You can eliminate some of your losses by not running and booking so many damn people on the show.
Yeah, exactly. And you can maximize everything. You can get more out of your talent. You can. There's so much more.
And some of the undercard, you know, they're still running freaking to four and a half plus hours. You could, some of the undercard matches are only getting like 8-9 minutes. You could actually extend some of the time on some of these card matches and let them have better matches. So your undercard doesn't just get swallowed up. Because at this point, it's like, why in the hell would you fly XX and X in if you're only going to give them 8-9 minutes for a match? You could have brought some local guy in for nothing, for $25 without airfare to give his, you can go 9 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, then you're not going to get this buzz on the internet for being a gigantic money mark. Right. I mean, for being a super indie.
All right. It's just frustrating because I want this company to succeed. I mean, I've been to every show. I'm glad I'm not going next month to the Cody Rhodes main event show because I'll be at Scenic City. So I made that easier. Until they start going shorter shows, I don't think I'm going to go. Until they prove they run shorter shows, I'll watch them on Twitch and deal with from that. But yeah, they need help with their booking. I mean, bottom line. I mean, they've had problems before, but this one was super glaring. And maybe, again, I didn't reach out to them this time. Maybe it was because flight delays. But you know what? If you're going to have flight delays every week, every show you're on, that's a problem too, you know?
Well, maybe that's the next step. Does Wrestle Circus need to invest in its own private jet?
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, listen, there's been plenty of very profitable wrestling companies in the past who have owned their own jets.
Ergo. Yeah, it did so well for the Crockett's.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think that's it. That's the next step.
Oh, man. All right. That's enough venom for me. Why don't we look at CWF Mid-Atlantic, brother? Oh, yeah, that's the other thing people say, though, about, well, you know, New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, they run 5 hours.
Once a year.
And also, let me explain New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, too. Okay. Most of the undercard is filled up with multi-man tag matches. So, essentially, the first hour and a half of Wrestle Kingdom is very missable because it's just running through six-man or eight-man tags that go 7 or 8 minutes. And then they're just there to fill out the card and to get people on the card, which is fine because guess what? They're a business that actually has people under contract. And then they give time to the matches that matter, that why people come and draw, come and come see. And then so there's a big difference between Wrestle Kingdom running for 5 hours. There's a reason for it. It's but Wrestle Circus, there is no reason for it. It's just nuts. And for the people out there who won't love these long shows, amen, brother. But I just, if you look at this, look at the heat on these matches, man. The matches, and it might have something to do with the structure of the matches, and all that. And if we're going to do these street fights with submission wrestling, Wrestle Circus needs to educate their fans that submissions matter. Why don't we take a break here, and then we'll come right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
With that said, let's move over to CWF Mid-Atlantic. And we're getting Weaver Cup action, Tim. I'm excited about the Weaver Cup. I thought they had a heck of a tournament last year. A lot of fun. And it opens up with Mick Moretti versus Lucas Calhoun. What'd you make of this?
I thought that Mick Moretti did a really good job of playing up the character, his character. He's got some wacky spots, but he's got a great wrestling base, and he comes across more of the old style of kind of the goofy comedy character. You think Boogie Woogie Man, kind of Jimmy Valiant, where he's using his kind of outlandish style, his goofy spots, as a way to confuse and distract his opponent to garner a victory. So I really appreciate that from him. Calhoun hit some really nasty-looking spots, one that was punctuated very strongly as the pup handle backbreaker that I think it was Stutzy or possibly Cecil who points out, if I got hit with that, I would go ahead and retire. I loved that line because it did look just that nasty. After the match that had some zany antics, some fast-paced action, you turn around and you have Calhoun pick up the big win with the Samoan drop after he'd been working over the midsection for pretty much the whole match. Perfect psychology, perfect storytelling. You come out of it and a guy who is relatively unknown in the company looks like a threat. A guy who, you know, is going out of the Weaver Cup looks like a guy who can definitely fill out your undercard as a very interesting character. So I thought a really good opening match for the Weaver Cup and a really good opening match for the show.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on all that stuff. And I like that they open because I didn't take either one of these guys super serious, and they come across as like as opening act guys, but they're good opening act guys.
Do you agree that they did a good job of taking a guy, like you said, who comes across like an opening act guy in Calhoun, and by the end of the match, you feel like you can take him a little bit more seriously going forward in the tournament?
Yeah, you can, but it's almost like... It's almost like in the like WCW, he's like Disco Inferno in a way, where he definitely has a ceiling.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that, but I just thought that was a really good job that they did focusing on taking kind of the two comedy-ish guys in the tournament and coming out of it, making the guy who wins and continues going looking like a possibly credible threat.
Oh no, yeah, they did a good job, but it's me. It's more me. I don't believe in Calhoun, so it's not a question of what they did. It's just me knowing that the end game isn't going to be Calhoun, though. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we get an Alex Daniels promo, which is pretty good stuff. Trying to do a little bit more serious. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. He's got a purpose. He's got a focus. He's got a mission, and it makes it feel more serious, which is good.
And then we get Aaron Epic versus Matty Nix. Fun little match. The bottom line is what you take away from it was the finish with the pile driver behind the ref's back. Totally awesome. Great finish. Gets Epic over as a massive cheat, breaking the biggest rule pretty much in CWF, the pile driver. Stutz confronts him backstage, and Epic goes, "It doesn't matter. I wasn't caught. It's not cheating if you're not caught." You know, I'm paraphrasing. So I'm curious on where that's going to go with the pile driver behind the ref's back and Stutz versus Epic in a confrontation. But I really enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you so much. You really get this guy over. Again, as I talked about, a guy that that really kind of has a strong heel lead-in with his connection to Aspen Rose, and then you even work her into the finish in a really great way, with her being the kind of distraction that helps him get the win, and with the pile driver, which is kind of the death move of CWF, so that also helps get him over even further. And I liked the grittiness from Epic. He felt super, just super violent and just kind of mean. So I think they did a great job there all around, moving forward with his character being kind of the big bad of the tournament.
And what do you think of the Stutz and Epic confrontation? You think it's going to go somewhere, or do you think this is just like a one-off type of thing?
Well, I mean, Stutz does play the kind of important kind of law figurehead of the company, figurehead character. And I guess it's reminiscent of another little podcast I have coming out soon. I'm just sneaking these plugs in everywhere. They're making the case for Pete Dunne coming out pretty shortly. And we talk about the UK title tournament and how his interactions with William Regal made him feel like a bigger star than anybody else in the tournament because of that. And I think it does a similar thing here with Epic. Not quite to the same level as Pete Dunne, but still having him interact with a guy who's looked at as an authority figure that way does make him stand out in like a bigger deal than anybody else involved.
Yeah, he gets the rub. And then we get a Hawks and Dice promo. Well, what'd you make of this?
I didn't get super into it. I wasn't like excited about it or anything, but you know, it's good to just have this stuff because I hate when you just are coming into cold matches without any feeling of like what the fuck is going on. So
yeah, I'm good. It gets the personalities over so you have an idea of what they're about. Which is they've done better than the Street Profits on the vignettes on NXT. Then we get Coach's Corner. Okay, one, I love this. I want to see, make this a regular thing. With that said, I mean, it's not just here. It's a trope everywhere. Why the hell would a baby face come out to Coach's Corner? I'm like, no, Lockhart, this is not good. It's never a good thing. With that said, I still thought it was a fun segment. What about you?
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, I don't know if Lockhart is supposed to be a babyface yet when he's being called out to Coach's Corner. So I agree with you still, because he did kind of, like, he turned his back on them and he doesn't want anything to do with the All-Stars. But I can somewhat see why he would come out, because you might think he's actually going to accept their apology. Or I guess their kind of weirdly backhanded apology, but he does not, obviously. I liked it. It was good, but it... More than anything, it sets up something that I'm going to kind of go off on later on.
Right. All right. And then we get a Smooth B promo. What'd you make of this? I mean, and partner, but Smooth B did all the talking.
Yeah, it's... what's his partner's name? I don't even remember at this point. Who cares? It's fine. PB Smooth has a natural charisma that works for him. I can definitely see other people not buying into it, because I think I said this before. He doesn't come across pro wrestling, but to me, I like it because he comes across real.
Yeah, I was one of the guys who I didn't see it when he first showed up in ring, but I saw it here, and I did like the charisma here. Then we got Logan Easton LaRue versus Utamaro. I will say, I hated the Will Ospreay inspired rope running spot where. So I will say that. But I liked the Paradise Lock. Liked how both guys got their characters over here. It was very effective in that way. And, I mean, I would have bet the house that Logan Easton LaRue was going over, and he did. But I thought they did a really fun match with the time they got. But besides that rope running spot, that Will Ospreay inspired a rope running spot, I really enjoyed this match. Enjoyed both guys. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you pretty much completely with that. I thought the structure of the match was weird, because they really were both heels to me. Utamaro playing kind of that old school ethnic heel character, which I guess you could take as not as firmly heel, just because there's no expressness, but he did kind of come across like sneaky Asian stereotype. Then it did kind of work its way into, like you said, LaRue kind of asserting himself as the more vicious, more dominant of the two, so that does help get his character over even further, and sets him up going.
Yeah, I didn't see Utamaro as a heel. I saw him as like a goofy bad baby face, honestly.
Well, I mean, even the commentary called it. Oh,
he was smiling a lot. I mean, yeah, he did the water spot, but he was smiling a lot. And I mean, other than the water spot, he didn't do anything like illegal or anything.
Well, I don't remember what he did, but I do remember even the commentary called it out, and he did something after the kind of blowing the water where they said, win by any means necessary. And I can't remember what he did, but it was something a little bit underhanded and cheap. So it did. And again, as I said, you could take it as not heal completely, because it does play into like sneaky Asian stereotype, where it's like he's not bad, that's just how they are, which at the same time is kind of really shitty, but right. it's CWF, so I don't really take anything as offensive, because it's all semi tongue-in-cheek.
I just didn't see it as a heel. I just saw him more as a goofy it was hard to get a read off him, to tell you the truth, because he was smiling, way too much to be a heel. For me anyway. But go on. What else were you gonna say?
Oh, that was it.
All right, and then that leads us into the Alex Daniels versus Steve Fierce match. What'd you make of this, brother?
I love Stevie Fierce. Such a great character, trained by Tyler Breeze, who's another guy who I just unequivocally love almost no matter what he does. I loved Stevie Fierce playing babyface here, which is something that he doesn't really do in freelance. So I was like just completely infatuated with the high speed kind of clap your hands, say yeah, babyface style of Stevie Fierce. Alex Daniels, I mean, the guy is just go, go, go. But here he's grinding down at some points, grabbing holds, working over stuff that looks super aggressive and gritty. I loved Stevie Fierce's comeback, as Alex seems to realize that, like, oh, fuck, this guy's tougher than I thought. It's going to take a lot to put him down. And then right after he has that realization, Stevie comes back on him. I thought that was perfect timing, the way that they did that, where you're kind of really telling that narrative that Alex Daniels just realizes, I can't put this guy down. And then a few moments later, he shows it to the whole crowd that he's able to come back on him. As Alex plays off this character of being easily distracted because he's too busy thinking about kind of the way he looks and the way the crowd is thinking about him, which I love that kind of cockiness from him. But he ends up being able to get the win as he focuses in, hits that nasty reverse Rana and the brainbuster into the corner, which just always looks like murder. And I thought that, again, as you talked about Alex Daniels with the promo earlier, setting the record straight about what he's planning to do going forward, and then he gets it done here. I think it's a really kind of solid exclamation point on the character. And honestly, with him already getting a really good match with Trevor earlier in the year, I think he's actually someone who's in contention to win the whole tournament overall, and I think they did a good job of positioning him that way here.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. I enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to see Stevie Fierce at SUP, Southern Underground Pro, after Scenic City. I thought he'd be a little bit more charismatic. He didn't seem like he was playing to the crowd, or it seemed like, I don't know, it just didn't seem like he was full of, like he believed in himself to start the, when he was coming to the ring. But I thought they had a real enjoyable match. Did you kind of see him kind of not being super charismatic coming to the ring?
Are you saying Alex Daniels not being super charismatic coming to the ring?
No, Fierce.
I think here he was toning it down, especially because he's playing babyface. Have you followed him pretty regularly in Freelance at all?
Not really.
Okay, so his character in Freelance is a heel that's like super over the top. So for him to play babyface here, I think he was definitely toning it down. But he brings a lot of charisma.
Okay.
Normally.
Yeah, I just didn't see it here. I saw it in the ring, but it just wasn't there, I felt, coming to the ring. And then we get this tag team gauntlet. I loved the bit where Eric Royal had to find a partner and ends up being Cool J. Especially when you're standing side by side, it's just the size differential is nuts. It was all fine, but it was just the lead up to Lockhart bringing out his partner, Caprice Coleman, so that got a big pop. And I thought they did a fun job. It wasn't blow away or anything, but I thought it was entertaining television. What about you?
Yeah, are you talking like the whole gauntlet overall, or just the kind of the promo?
Well, the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, the promo opening up I thought was great, and you're right about the size differential between Eric Royal and Cool J was ridiculous. The opening, I liked Percy Davis and, God, who's his partner here? I don't even remember his name, honestly. I feel so bad. But I liked him and Sharp to open it up with Dr. Dan. AC Hawks and Zachy Dice. I thought Zachy Dice was pretty interesting with his magic trick gimmick. Loved PB Smooth, Colby Red coming out and just kind of bodying everyone until Mike Mars and Donnie Dollars come off for this kind of hoss battle with the two big tag teams going at each other. As you said, Eric Royal comes out of nowhere, hits that Space Jam, gets that instant easy elimination. So you kind of tell that story where they're now waiting to see who's next. And Darius Lockhart comes out and his tag team partner is Caprice Coleman. And this is what I was talking about earlier that I was going to talk about as we get to it. I fucking loved this. I thought I've never been a huge Darius Lockhart fan. I know that he's very good, but I just get bored by him. I don't see a lot of personality. But here with Caprice Coleman, I felt like he was a lot more dynamic in ring. I thought Caprice Coleman brought a lot out of him, not just personality-wise, but work-wise in a way that made his personality pop as well. I love these two as a tag team. I think it's super great. You got Caprice Coleman coming off of ROH TV in the prominent role of really being, at times, the best thing going on in that company. And he's another one that I think, I don't know what's going on with his ROH contract situation. I know that they disbanded the team that he was a part of, the Rebellion. I don't know what they're doing with that. But he's a guy that's going to go super under the radar as a guy that if they drop the ball on him, they did. Because you know, no one's going to notice. He's not going to show up in NXT. He's not going to get a lot of buzz on the indies. But time in and time out, Caprice Coleman was the guy with the most personality, having some of the best matches, making the most out of the least constantly. So if ROH has parted ways with him and that's why he's showing up here, if they're not focusing on him as much, it's another example of ROH not knowing what they have, you know what I mean? Not knowing how to appreciate
him. He was the standout to me of that group. He was the one who used it as a springboard and got more over because of it. And if they drop the ball there, man, and then that's just Ring of Honor again, you know?
That's it. And like I said, this is one that'll go unnoticed because he won't show up in NXT. He won't.
No, he won't. Yeah, you're right.
But he's every bit as good as a lot of the guys that they dropped the ball on already.
Yeah, you know, I thought he had the best match. Speaking of, since I'm going to Phoenix City, I thought he had the best match in the opening round the first year he was in it. I thought him and it might have been Anthony Henry. I thought had the best opening match. I thought it was Henry. Might not have been, but it was. I know I had Coleman as my best opening round match. But overall, you know, super fun opening rounds of the Weaver Cup, huh?
Yeah, I loved it all around. I thought that it was a lot of fun. I just looked it up. Caprice Coleman was in the opening round with Jason Collins.
That's it, Jason Collins. Which, okay,
I agree with you. It was fantastic stuff. Caprice Coleman brings so much. I'm excited to see where they go because this was kind of part of the worldwide bracket, as they talk about, of the Weaver Cup. And then next, you know, step, we go into the CWF bracket, which is, that's where we start seeing the guys that, number one, the company's invested in, and number two, we're personally invested in because we've been watching them this whole time. So that's the stuff where I'm getting real excited.
Yeah. That's the bread and butter, exactly. So, and now we're looking at some NXT, and we open up with Ember Moon versus Lady Tapa. All right, what'd you make of this?
I thought it was a weird way to debut someone. I thought that Lady Tapa looked good for the first few seconds when she was allowed to wrestle, but then from there she just got pretty much squashed. I mean, I didn't know what the point of this was, honestly. Obviously, from there, Ember Moon comes back quickly and puts her down with her move. I think it did a good job to make Ember Moon look good, but I did not see why they booked this match this way.
Okay. Yeah, and it did really nothing for me. It was just, you know, an enhanced squash match. What did and then the Ember Moon promo didn't exactly light me on fire. It wasn't bad or anything. It was just kind of there, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I think I'm exactly what you're saying. Wasn't a big thing, but wasn't terrible. Wasn't great. It was just there.
And then we get back, and it looks like they're still pushing the Rude and Strong feud. And I think that's great. I mean, because it was a hot feud, and they realized, man, we really kind of missed the boat on this. We didn't realize was going to get this over. But is it a good idea to be pushing it right now when we have Drew Mack going into a feud with Rude, where you're going to then constantly compare the two?
That's so tough. I mean, Drew McIntyre and Roddy Strong had a fantastic feud a few years back. It was really, I think, what kind of put Drew McIntyre back on map.
Yeah, big time. Oh, big time.
Yeah, because I think he left WWE, and I think there was a lot of people that questioned him. Me, I mean, I think a lot of people know that I'm kind of a European wrestling fanboy. I've been referred to as co-opted by European wrestling. But even
I agree.
Yeah, even I kind of knew that Drew McIntyre was pretty good even before he got signed to WWE. I had seen very little of him, but I had seen some of him. So I was like, oh yeah, now that he's back on the indies, everything will be fine. But I think a lot of people didn't hold him in that regard, and the Roderick Strong feud and Evolve is what really kind of made people stand up and take notice. So comparing them and then building up a rivalry between them could pay off in some great matches.
Yeah, but right now I don't know if they're even building to that. It just seems like they're reminding us of the Rude Strong match, and that the feud is still going on.
Right.
That the feud's not over while he has the big match going into the special with Drew Mack, as in I don't think it's going to help Drew Mack any.
Right, exactly. That's kind of what I was going to get at in my roundabout way, is that I can see a way that you make this work, but it feels too convoluted and has too many steps to be worth the, you know what I mean, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And if I was them, I would kind of skip it and focus on the feud at hand, and then go back to
exactly the and then I mean give us the vignettes and the memories and all that shit.
Exactly.
I just think right now you don't want to, you know, I don't think, I mean, I'm not saying two feuds is going to confuse the audience, that's not the case, but it makes you choose between the two when you have choices. You don't want to give them that many choices, you know.
Well, I appreciate you being very nice and saying you don't want to demean the audience in that way, but if this is the crowd that doesn't pop and stays quiet because they want to hear more of Ronaldo's commentary, I don't know if maybe that is a little bit too much on their plate.
Right. And then we got Aleister Black versus, who is this guy? I can't even see
him. Oh, God. I don't even remember. It's, No, it's just the Aleister Black promos.
He is that actually, what it is? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. But then he has a... that's right. I write Aleister Black vignette.
Yeah.
You know, again, do we really need him? We know he's been established already. I save your vignettes for the new talents, and then live mic for your talents that have been already on the... That's how I view it. Vignettes are great for introducing the talent. Once they're introduced, then you give them a goddamn microphone and let them talk.
Right, and I think it's tough because Aleister Black is not... He's not a bad talker, but because of his accent and because of being... I think he's Danish or Dutch? I'm not even sure, which is really bad of me. But he's not what I think American audiences or people like Triple H and those guys might not consider him a natural promo. I think he has a promo style that gets across him as a person very well, and you totally understand him. So that's probably why they don't want to give him a live mic in front of the crowd, but I totally agree with you. And this feels a lot like the stuff with the UK talent when they did the European title tournament, where every week they just kept replaying the same promos from the tournament.
Yeah.
And it started to wear thin, and you're kind of like, what the fuck? Like, can we get something new at least? And this feels very similar to that.
Exactly. It's like, cue it up. Then we get the Authors of Pain versus I have no idea who the hell they were.
Timmy Bumpers and something Ramos, and Timmy Bumpers was Timmy Lou Retton.
Retton, right? Okay, yeah. That's why. I mean, I knew that. I just didn't remember the names they put down. And I like how Sanity comes out, Nikki Cross stands out in front of Authors of Pain, and Sanity destroys their opponents, and then the Authors of Pain kick the crap out of Sanity in a nice little brawl. I thought it was a fun segment. I thought Authors of Pain stood a little too tall in the segment, but maybe that's what they wanted. So, I mean, if that's what they wanted, then I thought it was a good segment. What about you?
I think that is what they wanted, but what I liked is I picked up a little bit of character work that was done really well based off of that. Authors of Pain stood very tall, as you said, and really felt dominant to where you almost don't take Sanity seriously as a threat. But what they did is they had the character kind of juxtaposition, which is, I think, a word that gets thrown around improperly a lot, as the way I just did, because juxtaposition, I think, is meant artistically and not necessarily to be just a comparison of two things, and only in, like, an actual artistic medium, but that's neither here nor there. But what they did is they had a great kind of duality between the members of Sanity, with Killian Dane being hot-headed and fired up and wanting to fight more, and he's pissed off that he got showed up, while Alexander Wolfe has a sly smirk and is laughing, coming across seemingly unhinged, but also you can stop and think that being a member of Sanity, he thinks that he's a step ahead of them, even though they just dominated them physically, so you can kind of buy into it and say, Sanity has a plan. So the reason why they're, like, Wolf is okay with the fact that he just got showed up is he knows that doing this actually caused chaos and kind of made Authors of Pain come into their world, so that he thinks that's going to help them beat them down the line.
Okay. Then we get the little Street Profits. You know, come on. I still don't understand what the hell they are. Do you know what their gimmick is yet?
No, it's... I hate to say it.
I'll admit, I'm not a trendy guy, so maybe it's something that's trendy that I have no idea what the hell what it is.
Well, it is and it isn't. Like, their gimmick is they use Snapchat. Like, at this point, that's kind of what they're showing. And that's not enough of a gimmick. Like, I hate to say it, but their gimmick is like, we're young, we know about social media, kind of. And it's like, this is the kind of thing that's put together by people who are older that don't understand that, like, their gimmick comes across as like, we're just people, because everyone who's like their age just acts like that. So there's real no gimmick to it.
Okay. I have no idea what Snapchat... I mean, I've never done Snapchat, so... no buys for me. We had No Way Jose walking. Just chilling, walking. Yes. And Thea Trinidad, right? Shows up and says it's not over, right? I'm not sure. All I can say is fucking weird. I don't know. It felt like I don't even know if this is usually I'm all for like, oh, that's a nice piece of business. I don't know what I would call this. Obviously they're extending the feud somehow, but I don't like the fact that C and Almas is nowhere to be around and they're just walking on the promenade. I just find it fucking weird. What about you? You said you liked it.
I like it in that it continues to push something that was, it was never real, but like it could be real, which is the reality era. Right. And like that was talked about, but it's like, it's not a real thing. In that, like, I like the narrative of the kind of NXT university that they like, they have lives and they hang out in the same spaces outside of the show. And this kind of pushes that narrative along, that, you know, No Way Jose is out kind of bebopping around, living his life. And he gets interrupted. Now, again, I get you that Cien Almas is nowhere to be seen, and I agree with that. But I think, I don't know if it's the same level of effectiveness, but I think it's in the same vein of the kind of like, let's put a black guy with a white girl. That'll get a lot of heat that never works. Because, like, no crowd... I've never seen a crowd in wrestling that, like, is all acceptably racist enough to be like, hey, yeah, we all agree that race mixing is bad. Like, I've never seen that even, like, years and years ago. I've never seen that be a thing that's acceptable for, like, a lot of people just to say out in the open in public. But what I'm saying, or where I'm coming from on that, is, like, this feels like it's a thing that where the idea is get heat on Cien Almas because he's got his girl doing his business for him. And I kind of like it in concept, but I don't know if it works. And I don't know if he'll get real heat from it.
Okay. True. And then we get the Velveteen Dream versus Bononi. And then we get a Velveteen Dream promo. I kind of liked his promo. I didn't like his delivery again. I thought the match was just there. I thought he got some serious ups on his move. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I felt weird in the beginning of the match just because I don't know what the fuck they're doing with Bononi. It feels like they're kind of, like, they want to focus on him a little bit, but they also job him out, like, the jobbinest of jobbers of all time.
Yeah. Almost in the old WWF structure, he'd be like the Johnny Rods, like the top of the jobber pool, or a Dominic DiNucci type guy. But he's jacked to the gills.
Yeah, but he doesn't even have the credibility of like a Dominic DiNucci or a Johnny Rods.
No, he doesn't. You know, like they were stars in other places. Yeah. But he's like, as opposed to just jobber, they actually give him a name.
Yeah, he's like he's just in a weird spot. So when we came into the match, I'm like, oh, you know, I don't really take either of these guys seriously. We'll see where they go. And then I forgot that, like, Dream is a pushed act that they take seriously. So when he squashed him, I was, like, snapped back to reality. And I was like, oh, okay. Again, I agree with you. Promo was fine, but I just don't buy into Dream at all. Honestly, he comes across awkward.
I agree. Then we get the Regal interview where he, you know, he announces he ends up making Ember Moon versus Asuka match. Yeah, give me more Steve Regal. Make stuff interesting. I mean, he can read a phone book and make it interesting. What about you?
Yeah, I love Steve Regal. He really gets everything about wrestling, and as you said, he makes everything work.
Smart guy. Then we get a Drew Mack promo. What you make of this?
I thought this was really good. It made me buy into Drew McIntyre, kind of kept talking about his past, but then like leading that into his future. I thought that was good. It was good stuff, and it made me excited to see his title match.
Right, and then we get Raul Mendoza promo. I was surprised they gave him some promo time. What about you?
Yeah, that was interesting. I'm excited to see where they go from this. He's a guy that a lot of people are super high on. I'm not the most high on him, but, you know, I think he's a guy that they could definitely use.
Fair enough. And then we get the main event of Tommy versus Ono. You know, I didn't really think much of the match, but it's all about the heel turn and the progression of heelness of a Tommy. And I thought that worked well, but it didn't come across super hot because the audience was dead for it, huh?
Yeah, the crowd didn't get super into it. They didn't buy into it. I think they drug out the heel turn a little bit too long to where it just...
Did Hero look dumb?
Yeah, Hero looked dumb a lot of times going through it. It felt like it was just too eventual, too, like, kind of predetermined that you knew where it was going. I thought the angle was hot and would have worked if you had done it a lot quicker.
Yeah, I totally agree. And another NXT where it was kind of some hits, some highs, some lows. More lows than highs, though. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think I hope they turn it back up soon because, yeah, I'm really... really feel like we're missing something on this show.
Yeah, they usually slow it down right before they heat it back up going into the specials. So I'm expecting it to start. The special is when? Do you remember?
I honestly don't know off the top of my head, but I would assume SummerSlam it's coming up soon. Oh, is it SummerSlam? Yeah. Jesus, it's a while away.
I think it's SummerSlam week. So we have probably a few more weeks where it really starts heating up. So hey. Why don't we take a break and we're going to go continue our exploration through G1-ness, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We'll be right back.
Coming soon from the creative minds of the Place to Be Nation Pop Network. The audio adaptation that no one was asking for, but everyone deserved. Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater presents Watchmen, an audio feast for your ears, thrill to the exploits of the comedian.
These are demons. It's an intergalactic invasion into this space through people. They have sexual rituals, some of the most ancient Egyptian rituals, where they believe they are possessed by entities, space aliens.
Silk Spectre.
Good. Hey, licking your finger, it's like licking a battery. It's all sort of...
Night Owl.
Well, you know how it goes. Sometimes I come down here and sit around a little bit, think about the times when we were making the towns, doing the drugs, fucking the rats.
Dr. Manhattan.
Clearly, you don't really care about what stimulates me.
Ozymandias.
Puta, the Soviets, Vietnam, anyone, Mila Jovovich,
and Rorschach.
But what it doesn't change is the fact, and this is something we can all agree on, that all of the whores and politicians will look up and they'll shout, "Save us, JR," and I'll look down and I'll whisper, "Ma."
You won't believe your ears. You won't believe the dark places your imagination will take you. Featuring cameos from some of your PTBN favorites.
Baby, that's quite a drop, I said.
Oh, they're just paying me to handle monsters from outer space? No.
Maybe it was a couple of guys and they overpowered him.
He cometh up and swerve, cut down like a flower.
Fly me to the moon, let me fuck amongst my star. Oh, I guess Dr. Osterman finally arrived.
You remember Skimika?
It's Watchmen, the greatest graphic novel of all time, as you've never heard it before. Transformed into the most self-referential collection of in-jokes on this or any other medium. Only from the hard-traveling fanboys and Place to Be Nation Pop.
All right. And we're back, and we talked about nights 1-3 on our previous podcast. Now we're starting, and we're going to be doing night 4-8. And we open up with Yano versus Kojima. What about this match, man? Anything?
I mean, realistically, no, not much. I give it 2 stars. I thought it's interesting that Yano, or Kojima, is a lot less open to kind of playing around with Yano's bullshit. Lots of kind of tomfoolery, but, you know, nothing I can get super into here.
Yeah, but then I'm with you. 2 stars. And it was what it was. But, man, then we get Juice Robinson versus Evil. Loved this match. 4 stars. I liked how Robinson is playing into the injuries of stuff. I like the chemistry between these two. I liked Robinson selling. I like Evil focusing on the neck at first. Crowd was totally into it. I also like the fact that this could be a future, like, long-term program between the two. Like, we were talking about how Dominic and Kane could be long-time rivals. I get the same vibe from Juice and Evil here. I thought the finishing stretch was freaking awesome. And I thought both guys just knocked it out of the park. What about you, man? Are you on mute?
I agree with you completely. I also gave it 4 stars. I thought that a big part of what made this work is Juice's selling. The guy is just one of the best baby faces kind of on the planet right now. The crowd.
What do you think about this talking point when I see where they're saying, yeah, he's almost as good of a seller as Ishii? I mean, I don't. I get so angry when I see that talking point. It's like, what?
Wow, what fucking planet would you have to be on to say something like that?
Yeah, I see it like they just, like, put it over, like Ishii's like this grandiose seller. I'm maybe on the maybe in New Japan and in the hard hitting when we let each other hit each other spots, but fuck.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Ishii's not bad, and I like Ishii, and I think that he has some nuanced selling that I buy into at times, but
yeah, but he's not he doesn't suck you in like
no
Juice does with his selling. You know,
Juice gets the whole crowd to buy into everything he does. He fucking sells huge with his face at all times, constantly. I strongly disagree with the entire premise and reality that comparison is based on.
Yeah,
is my response to it.
It's like Moose when he says the Earth is flat. this argument. I mean, just
yes.
Ridiculous. All right, go on, man. I'm sorry.
So yeah, from there, I just, like I said, I agree with everything you said. Great back and forth. Loved the stuff at the end. Realistically, what makes this match so good is Juice's selling, Evil's kind of evilness and his power moves and everything, and I gave it 4 stars as well.
You know, and I think months back when I think it was when Juice had his match with Naito, I think we said, yeah, I can't. We both were, like, super high on Juice in the G1, right? We're, like, we're really excited on what he was going to do with the G1 because he's going to be able to be put in position to work top guys that he normally wouldn't get a chance to work with. And with his selling, we thought he was going to have unique matches, right?
Yeah, exactly. And especially being kind of one of the only people who is going to sell that way also made us both, I think, pretty sure that he was going to stand out big time.
Yeah, I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but where I'm going with this is I don't know if you read about Meltzer, kind of felt like he took a pot shot at Juice in the Observer.
I don't understand why he would. I don't know if I heard about this exactly, so I don't know.
I wish I had it in front of me. It was just the fact that he mentioned Juice kind of like wasn't deserving of a G1 spot. Yet we have fucking Yano out here and stuff. So, I mean, I don't understand how you would think Juice wasn't deserving. It kind of felt like a shot where in that thing.
Melts are going to melt, I guess, is the only response I have for that. I mean, the guy, yeah. He's got his taste. He's good at what he's good at. Me and him obviously don't...
Oh, right.
We're not into the same stuff.
All right. What about Sonata and Suzuki?
I don't know. I think other people were probably higher on this than me. Suzuki plays up his character the whole tournament, uses his minions to get advantage as much as possible. I like all of that, but he does a lot of crowd brawling, around the ring brawling. There's going to be a match later on where I'll come across as a bit of a hypocrite because I'm like super into it. But here it doesn't work for me as much. Sonata doesn't even really get his shine going before Desperado jumps in and goes after him because the ref is down. And then from there, Suzuki uses that to get the gotcha pile driver in the pin. This was like solid character stuff for Suzuki, kind of really establishing who he is and what he's about in the tournament. That said, I gave it 3.25 star. I think both guys looked really good, really solid. But these are the matches where it makes the G1 really start to kind of drain on you or drag on you.
Okay, and here's the quote. The big surprises internally and a good sign is just how much the crowd has gotten behind wrestlers like Juice Robinson and Sabre, who were somewhat controversial picks to be in the tournament. Robinson, because he's only a few months removed from being a prelim guy and wouldn't have even been considered for this field not all that long ago, and Sabre because he's not a true heavyweight. But Robinson has worked well in his spot, and the crowd loves him knowing full well he's not going to contend for the championship. Sabre's mat wrestling has been incredible. That's the kind of like a backhanded kind of a dump on Juice that he isn't deserving.
Right, and...
And Sabre Jr. and both of them are having great G1, so...
Right, both of them are honestly standouts of the tournament, and their freshness is what's making them stand out, honestly. So taking a chance on them, as he says. But I think he can coach that statement and kind of parse it out in a way where it comes across as you could possibly take it as being based on what he's hearing from sources inside of New Japan. You know what I mean?
Possible, yeah.
That's like, that point. Was the opinion of them going into the tournament.
Fair enough. Sonata and Suzuki, I give it 3 stars. I will say, I know it's been a while, I don't think I've mentioned it, but I really like Sonata's real gear as opposed to his old motorcycle gear. I like Suzuki's just wrecking Sonata. I thought Sonata's comeback after the leg was well done. Still didn't really hook me in. 3 stars. Then we got Omega versus Tama Tonga, and I really enjoyed like the Elite Bullet Club battle. But overall, I thought it was just kind of like a work rate sprint. Gave it like 3.75. Thought it was by far the best Tama Tonga's looked in the tournament. What about you?
I did it again. I think up until this point, this was definitely where Tama Tonga looked the best. I think after this, he has matches where he looks worse. But he also has, I think, at least one other... No, you know what? I don't think I've seen anything yet that looked better than this for Tama Tonga. Loved the fieriness. Loved the storyline. Kind of troubling that I know that it's just Omega and Tama Tonga working their own angle, and that it's not anything that the company itself is going to focus on.
Right.
So, yeah. I love Omega when he takes control. He kind of copies the slide of Tama Tonga and hits the Dr. Bomb off of that. I love Tama Tonga cutting off Omega as he got going with the spear. But then at the end of it, it felt like Omega really came across super dominant, which I understand in the context. He's the leader of the group. He should come across dominant. But throughout the tournament, it really becomes clear that Tama Tonga is a guy that the company is serious about. So I don't know if Omega should have been so dominant over him. That said, I gave this match 3.5 stars because, as we both agree, Tama Tonga looked great here, and Omega was, you know, he was Omega. I mean, he's, I don't care really what anyone says or thinks, he's one of the best wrestlers on the planet right now, so it's hard for him to have a bad match.
Yeah, I think he did. He brought up the best in Tama Tonga, where I think Tama Tonga is either, he's best either if you give him like a big-time structured match, or you get him in where you allow him to show off his natural athletic ability, and that's what I think Kenny did. And allowed Tama Tonga to shine in that element as opposed to doing a big muscle-up match. I think it's best to have Tama Tonga be a vertical and up on his feet, go type of thing, because it allows the action to get rid of some of his bad instincts. Then we got Elgin versus Okada. What you make of this one?
Well, I liked it a lot, but about at the same level as the match before it. I like Elgin showing off his power, throwing Okada around pretty easily. I thought that this was the most that Okada has really looked helpless, in not just in the G1, but in a long time in general. Elgin, with his cutoff spots, are kind of perfectly timed throughout the spot, as Okada really comes across like a valiant fighter, but he just he can't kind of counteract Elgin's size. I really enjoyed, like, towards the end, it started to really feel like Epic War territory, and it did feel a little bit kind of in that self-conscious epic territory. It wasn't the worst example of it that you'll see in New Japan, especially not even in G1 setting, but...
Yeah, because I thought Omega and Elgin were much, much worse than the self-conscious epic one match later on, but I don't know if you'll agree with me, because I know you're a bigger fan than on that guy than I am.
I mean, I liked that match, but I wouldn't disagree with you on that fact that it was self-conscious epic. Mm-hmm. That said, like I said, I gave this 3.5 stars as well. I like Elgin teasing the burning hammer with Okada flipping around in it. Again, I've talked about my kind of dislike for these finishes with a lot of back and forth countering, but I think Okada is the guy who really makes it work. And it feels like all the other guys in New Japan are trying to imitate the Okada like style of match with that big athletic back and forth counter segments. And Okada is really the one who it feels authentically him to have that be the finishes of all of his matches.
Yeah, I liked it better than you. I gave it 4.25. I like Elgin having Okada's number early on. He was in the power moves to establish himself. I loved Elgin catching Okada on his dive over the guardrail. I thought that was really impressive. I liked Okada's comeback, and it focused on Elgin's neck. Elgin, again, gaining control with his size. Great back-and-forth match, and I thought I told a pretty damn good story. I really enjoyed it, 4.25. Then we go to night 5 of G1. We open up with Zack Sabre Jr. versus Yoshihase. I like Desperado setting up Zack's lifters early on, and then finally Zack gets to the arm. Yoshihashi is great putting over the arm work, though Yoshi needs some more. I think he needed more offense to be credible in this match. Felt like Zach kind of guzzled him up a little bit here. 3.25. It could have been better if you believed Yoshihashi could win. But overall, I thought it was good. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, very solidly have the same feeling. I gave it 3 stars. Zach is just like a wrestling god here, coming across like he's just completely handily got Yoshihashi under his thumb. It feels like Yoshihashi is being tortured. It feels like Stations of the Cross at times, how badly he's getting taken apart. Yoshihashi's fiery underdog babyface stuff is good, but as you said, it's hard to buy into when you just don't believe into it, even slightly. Zack stays all over the arm constantly. I love the countering back and forth with the Made of Japan and the UK clutch, and even with Yoshihashi rolling through a variation of the UK clutch into the Made in Japan. And this, again, as I said earlier about Okada, like, he makes it work when he does the countering back and forth finishes. They made it work here where it felt believable with the countering back and forth stuff that then set up into more of a kind of flash, grab the armbar, and then actually grabs into the octopus, puts the boot on the back of the head, and really wrenches back on him to get the finish. And I think I already said 3 stars. I enjoyed the match. Thought it went really well.
What were your thoughts on Nakata and Tanahashi there, Timothy?
I liked it. This was another showing of kind of Tanahashi. From the opening of the match, I thought that Nagata's facials, just watching Tanahashi enter, really set the tone for me for the whole match. You just could feel Nagata looking at him in a way where he just feels like wrestling has passed him by. This isn't like kind of his wrestling anymore, with this being the top guy. And the guy that everyone loves is this, you know, this guy with this multicolored mullet playing air guitar. And I kind of thought that that played into the match as Okada kind of, Nagata kind of, you know, he's a step slower. Tanahashi's going after him, dodging stuff. And Nagata thinks, oh, this guy's got no chance against me grappling. And Tanahashi shows him, no, I got you there. I know how to grapple. And showing him he can kind of counter back to whatever quickness Nagata has left. Striking, kind of strike exchange is the only thing that Nagata has on him, but even there, Nagata can't keep going. He doesn't have the stamina to keep up with him. And I loved kind of Tanahashi playing up the heel side of things. He's putting down the old vet, and he's 100% understands that the crowd is going to hate him for it. So he buys into it. I love at one point he strums the air guitar, and then he just throws it off to the side, as he can tell the crowd is not here to see Tanahashi play air guitar tonight. They do not care. So he casts it to the side as he then goes to work, just being kind of a dick the rest of the way through. And I thought the finish was super hot. The crowd was really into it. That all said, I gave it 3 stars. I felt neither guy was trying to really exert themselves too much, but they really played the crowd like a fiddle when it came to psychology and storytelling.
Yeah, I liked it more than you. I gave it 3 3/4. I enjoyed Tanahashi working the leg. And again, just like we were talking a few weeks back about the figure four being completely changed in psychology. Here we see it again where Tanahashi uses the figure four right off the bat to soften up the leg for more leg work. I just can't get over that, using the figure four as the prop, as the setup for an arm ringer, for a Fujiwara arm bar, leg bar, or whatever. I like Tanahashi playing into the booze and embracing being the heel here. Nagata destroys Tanahashi's arm in the comeback. Real good stuff. Yeah, I thought they told a really fun narrative here. And then we got Naito versus Fale. I enjoyed this match too. Gave it 2 3/4. I enjoyed Fale using his size and Fale throwing, targeting Naito's back. Good solid match. 2 3/4. You know, just good bread and butter storytelling match. What about you?
Yeah, essentially the same, except for I liked it a little bit more. 3 1/4. I liked back and forth. I liked the work from Fale, as you said, taking over the back. I liked there was some kind of interesting stuff from Naito, kind of being taken out of his element because he's wrestling such a bigger, stronger guy, which I think works really well when Naito sticks to his character so much, and then here he really can't. There was some stuff that I thought was interesting as Naito is teasing for a German suplex, which is kind of falls into that Tanahashi Hulk Hogan, why is this babyface even trying to pick up this giant monster? There's no way he'll ever be able to do it thing. And to me, for Naito, that doesn't really fit with his character, but it does fit in the context of the match. That said, I did like Fale blocks the Destino a couple times and kind of just shows that Fale's size and power is essentially going to negate Naito's ability to even hit his big move here. So it really, that's what ends up costing him the match as he gets put down with the grenade and the bad luck fall.
All right, fair enough. What do you think of Ishii and Ibushi?
This was like strike heavy, super no sell heavy. A lot of stuff that made me question what the fuck was your game plan going into here. But it plays into the story and the character of Ishii. That's Ishii's kind of thing, is his game plan is to throw everybody off their game plan and cause them to kind of stand and throw punches with him. And it usually costs them, but sometimes it doesn't. Here it does not, as Kota Ibushi eventually gets the win with the pin. There were some stiff strikes. There was some stuff that can really pop you sitting at home. There's, you know, some no-selling and some yelling in each other's faces that I can see why it gets you really hyped up. But for me, at the end of a match like this, I'm not super, like, I don't feel like my soul was fed, as stupid as that sounds. I don't feel like I got much out of it. I don't feel like there was much story or narrative to it. It really feels like it was stuff that was just done because it gets a reaction, but no real thought put into it. That said, I give it 3.25 star because I thought, like I said, people like it, and a lot of people got into it big time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm glad. I thought it was going to be the low man. I mean, I felt like a match you weren't going to like, but you never know because it was getting so much positive love online. You know, it was a big moves match. I know it's a New Japan trope of a big strike exchange, but I like it, but not how it was done. I like it when it means something, and just going into it, it just doesn't do it. It was a big strike match, a lot of no selling. Ibushi, this is Ishii's bread and butter, and for Ibushi, Kota Ibushi to be able to play into that game just doesn't make any sense to me. And why would you go toe-to-toe with a strike-heavy Ishii? Again, makes zero sense. I give it 3.25 because it still was good enough stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of talent to do what these guys are doing. And I think both guys have a lot of talent, especially Ibushi. Then we got Makabe and Goto. Very similar to Ibushi and Ishii. Difference being, Goto and Makabe, I can buy into them as foes. I have a big problem being able for Ibushi to be able to buy into him being able to stand toe to toe with Ishii. I can buy into Makabe and Goto being able to stand toe to toe with each other. We got it here. That Makabe bump to the floor with something else. Both guys bring in the lumber. Good, solid, hard-hitting match. 3.5 stars. What you make of that one, Timothy?
I'm at 2.5. The only notes I write here is, even though this match was pretty good, I can't care about it. I agree with you. It's easier to buy into these guys having this kind of match than it is Kota Ibushi and Ishii. But I don't know if you don't buy into it, but Don West made it pretty clear that Kota Ibushi is a top-level striker, and he could be in K1 right now if he wanted to. So even though I think that K1 doesn't exist anymore, you have to take him seriously as a major kickboxer. Like I said, 2.5 stars. Even if this match was really great, there's just no way I can buy into these characters enough to care about the match.
Fair enough. That leads us going into night 6 of the G1, and we open up with Elgin vs. Kojima. What'd you make of this one?
What's interesting is that, like, I gave this the same rating, 2.5 stars, and I have, like, a little bit more to say about it, but realistically, I probably enjoyed it about the same. I felt like they really cut this match off at the knees. I felt like it was weird that everybody else sells their ass off for Elgin and really puts him over as this big-time power guy, and then in this match, Kojima really kind of was in control and took over on him way too fast. And it's what kind of affects these G1 matches, these G1 cards in general for me, is that unfortunately, because New Japan doesn't kind of limit their roster with the concept of understanding that they have to do the G1 every year, they let these guys have hour-long matches, 45-minute matches regularly, all this stuff, to where then when you turn around to the G1 and you have nothing but 20-minute time limits, you have to have matches like this that feel like they're kind of abridged short versions of what would normally be epic matches. And it, for me, it kind of fucks with the psychology of wrestling in general for your entire company. So that said, that really kind of affected the match for me. This felt like they were cutting out big chunks of what would be a normal match between the two in New Japan. I don't know if I said, yeah, 2.5 stars.
I went 3.25. I thought it was a nice battle of tough guys. Elgin with the apron bomb. Enjoy Elgin targeting the arm. Overall, I thought it was good, solid stuff. You know, nothing to write home about, but good, solid work from both guys. And that leads us to Evil versus Tama Tonga. I give it 2.75. Loved Tama's Superman punch into that modified DVDT. Thought that was absolutely wicked. But yeah, these guys let me kind of cold. This really just didn't do much for me. What about you, Timothy?
You kind of hit the spot that I liked. That said, I disliked everything else. I felt like Evil was dogging it here. I felt like I didn't buy into Tama Tonga. I think that the heel dynamic affected the match a lot for me. Everything felt super repetitive at this point in the G1. It felt like these guys are going through the motions of the same shit that they do all the time. Too much around the ring brawling again for me, and the finish. This is where it feels like the counter back and forth shit just felt too tacked on, too forced, and didn't feel legitimate. I gave this match 1 star.
Yeah, fair enough. That leads us to Juice Robinson and Suzuki. What you make of this?
I love Suzuki jumping Juice before the intro's done. This, again, it's so funny. Back-to-back matches, but it just shows the difference. The crowd brawling, the viciousness of Suzuki here works for me big time. Suzuki just looks like he wants to kill this fucker. He's going at him hard. Desperado's getting involved, helping Suzuki take control. Juice walking gingerly around with his knee. He doesn't want to put any pressure on it. I love. And he's got this look on his face like he realizes this is not the guy to be wrestling with a bad knee. And I just love that. It plays into everything that you can get into with Suzuki. He realizes, you know, this is not the guy to have an exposed limb to take advantage of me. And I can read all of that on the face of Juice as he's just sitting there selling his knee. He's got this, like, he's pounding on it. And he's just got this, it's almost like a mixture of aw shucks and oh fuck. He's just kind of like, I'm going to get killed here. Turn around, and he does. Suzuki attempts the hanging in the ropes armbar. That gets countered, and it almost becomes worse for Juice because it gets countered into a knee bar hanging in the ropes, so the bad knee is now getting worked over. I thought Juice's fire working his way out of the hole is fantastic. Suzuki comes across like a complete asshole. Every time Juice gets going, there's just a swift kick to the knee from Suzuki that puts him right back down. And the crowd is just popping hard for everything. This is where teasing back and forth works again. Long stalling gotch pile driver just to agonize the crowd. Suzuki is just that sadistic that he has to let everyone know that he's going to finish this guy off. And I gave this 3.75 star. I could probably even give it higher, but unfortunately it's G1 season and the fatigue becomes real when you start getting into night 4 and night 5.
Yeah, it's true. I give it 4 though, nonetheless. Battle it out. I thought another great Robinson performance, and Suzuki was the foil he needed. I loved it. I really like Juice, how he's treating his matches, kind of like a chapter in a story. Like here, earlier in the match, one of his matches, he hurts his leg. Here he comes into the match selling the leg. I'm just marking for that. I love it. And he looks like he's in bad shape. I love Suzuki just targeting the damn thing and just destroying it. I thought it was a nice way of it paying off. Really good stuff. What you make of Omega versus Yano? No, that's me. I'm sorry. Omega vs. Yano.
I mean, neither of us are going to have much to say, right?
Yeah, over-the-top comedy. Two stars. What'd you make of it?
2 3/4. I thought some of the stuff was original and fun. But, yeah, over-the-top comedy.
What'd you make of Okada and Sonata?
I liked it a lot. I love these guys kind of matching up to each other pretty evenly. I think it really bumps Sonata up every time he faces Okada because that becomes very glaring that these guys are really good matches for each other physically and kind of athletically. That said, I thought that the start was a little... It was a little trepidatious. I think that as it gets going, it definitely was nice. I thought that there was not a lot of focus, realistically. Sonata attacks the knee. Okada sells the knee. Sonata goes after the arm. Okada sells the arm a little bit. But realistically, then he's going for the dragon sleeper. So I'm kind of like, why even attack the limbs at all? Okada, again, the back and forth finish. The really hot finish makes his matches always feel, I think, better than they are. I think that people really like Okada a lot because they get left with a really nice feeling of that his matches were super important and cool because of the finishes. I give this 3.5 stars, and like I said, lacked focus. These guys are really good together, but I think they need a match where they really get some time and they really tell a solid story that I can sink my teeth into.
Totally agree with you. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5. I like Sonata targeting the back. Okada telling a good story. Overall, I mean, good solid stuff. Then we move into night 7 of the G1, and we get Ishii versus Yoshihashi. I got a good solid bout. I thought Yosh's quad kicks absolutely sucked, and they're gonna be that bad in business disposing. Get rid of it. I mean, it was the shits. All I can say, the total shits. What about you? What do you think of this match?
I don't know if I'll go that far.
But I gave it 3.25 stars, though.
Oh, shit. I gave it 2 3/4. So I guess okay. I liked it less than you. Yeah, I had some issues with it. Again, it just really comes down to Ishii and finding a lot of what he does has no psychology. I mean, the only psychology to his matches is that they're fighting each other. And they're fighting each other real hard. Like I said, Ishii comes across like a guy who, like, he has a game plan. His game plan is to throw everybody off their game plan and make them fight his kind of match. But then beyond that, his kind of match is dumb. So it really affects my ability to enjoy his matches.
Yeah, fair enough. Then that leads us into Bad Luck Folly and Zack Sabre Jr. What were your thoughts here?
I liked that this was really the first time that it looked like Zach was given any trouble. It takes a lot for him to be able to kind of get anything going on Folly. He gets thrown into the rails. He gets beat up a lot. He gets stood on. I like Zach grabbing at the leg even when he's in the ropes getting stomped on, just to show that he's got that dangerous tenacity. He's trying to grab an ankle. He's trying to get something. I like Zach slipping out the back, kind of play up that escapism side of Zack Sabre Jr. And then once he does slip out, he's grabbing for a hold. Then finally getting the win with kind of a flash out of nowhere victory roll, gets that pin, really shows Zack Sabre Jr.'s dangerousness is not necessarily violence, which he can show as well, especially like in the match with Tanahashi to begin with. He showed that he can be violent, he can be ruthless, he can be aggressive, but he's also dangerous because he'll just beat you. So he will, like in a match here with Fale, he understood, I'm not really going to be able to hurt this guy, but I can beat him, and he proves that he does. He proves that he can because he does beat him. I gave it 3.5 stars, really enjoyed the narrative and the story and the structure, and really getting to see another side of Zack Sabre Jr. here, but he also still comes out of it looking strong.
Yep. I thought this was a great Zack performance, but with that said, it still didn't do much. Fale is a pretty big sack to carry. I give it 2.5, though. Fale working the Zach's back, like Zach's cattle pick in the ropes. I really like that. But overall, it didn't have a whole lot particularly going for it, but good solid work. What you make of, then we got Kota Ibushi versus Makabe. Give it 3 stars. Makabe, trying to turn this into a fight. Ibushi's falling right into it. Loved Makabe's knee drop from the top. But overall, I didn't think they had a really compelling match. What about you, Timothy?
Same. 2.25. Not into it super much. Liked the long drama of Kota teasing going for the super bomb, but realistically, you know there's no chance in hell he's going to hit it on Toge Makabe. Toge sends him to the floor, hits that King Kong knee drop, and gets the pin. For the finish that I thought, that really, like, all you needed to see was that part of the match, and the rest of it you could skip.
What'd you think of Naito and Nagata?
I feel bad because I gave this 2.5, and that's probably not correct. But again, after that match and after so much G1, stuff starts to really drag on you. That said, I thought it was weird that Naito is more respectful to Nagata than he is to literally anybody else in the tournament. And that's kind of the story of his whole character, is that he's disrespectful. So you'd think he'd be even more disrespectful to the veteran, but he's not, which I thought was weird. I thought that there's, like, you know, some kicks to Nagata on the mat, that's like the first sign of disrespect that fires Nagata up. And then from there, he's got some big kicks to the head, nice heart attacks. Nagata really barely gets going, but he's still definitely looks like he can keep it going with a strong style strike off fest. But the weird thing to me is I feel like Nagata really works. He's working these matches similarly to the kind of Ishii level of, like, boring strike fest stuff. He focuses on the arm a lot, but realistically, I don't know what he's looking for the finish when it comes to arm holds. You don't really ever see Nagata winning with any kind of arm locks, so that really kind of affects my appreciation of his arm work. Naito gets a tricky version of the Destino out of nowhere, and then hits the full-fledged one to get the pin, and as I said, 2.5 stars.
Yep, I give it 3.25. I'm really, finally Naito transitions on to work in the neck, Nagata finally on the arm, but yeah, they could have done more, but a good solid bout, 3.25. What do you got next for? We got Tanahashi versus Goto. You know, 3.25, kind of just there. You know, it's kind of like fatigue's clicking in, and it was fine. Go see Goto working the arm. Tanahashi sells it well, but again, I thought this night was a really disappointing night overall when it came to the wrestling. What about you?
Yeah, and then it's followed by a pretty decent night, honestly, but it is a combination of the B-block matches not being great, the B-block nights in general not being great. I gave it 2.75. Got a lot out of the crowd. Goto attacking the arm is good. Tanahashi sells his ass off, but realistically, this is a match where, even though it was in the main event, it felt like Tanahashi was kind of doing his take the night off, I know I can get a big crowd pop without doing too much work kind of night.
Yeah. What do you make of night 8 now? We're into G1. Juice Robinson versus Tama Tonga.
I thought that this was a pretty powerful night, even for being, like, kind of... Actually, I am completely off there. I thought that this night was probably the worst A-block night so far, based on my match ratings. I think that it had a very good main event that I enjoyed. Is this B-block? I think I'm mixing them up. Either way, Tama Tonga and Juice had a okay match. I gave it 3.25. It shows a lot here that Tama Tonga finally has, or not Tama Tonga, but Juice finally has a kind of disappointing match with Tama Tonga. Tama getting the win here really, really kind of shows not only that they're very serious in pushing him, but, like, it also upsets me quite a bit. Like I said, 3.75. I never really got super into it other than I really love Juice's selling, but I couldn't buy into Tama Tonga.
Fair enough. Where are we at? What match are we talking? Juice and Tama Tonga?
Yeah, Juice and Tama Tonga.
Yeah, I liked it. Give it 3.75. Again, Juice selling the leg throughout the tournament is really good, and makes you believe he has a shot and stuff, and it's just neat. that he has. His selling is so believable. I mean, you have him. You don't know if he's really fucked up his leg or not. I mean, is that believable as selling? I thought the big heat segment of Tama Tonga clipping that leg and going after it. I thought it was a great spot. But, man, Juice is able to prevail and wins. That leads us to Sonata versus Yano. What do you think of this?
One star. I liked Sonata taking advantage of Yano with kind of a bullshit move and getting the count out, but there's nothing else to this that I really cared about.
Then we got, I agreed. Let's go to Evil versus Suzuki. What'd you make of this?
Wild brawl to start out, which makes perfect sense between these two. I love Evil getting the best out of Suzuki, which really no one does in the crowd brawling part because Evil is such a power wrestler, a power fighter. I love the shit really pops off as Suzuki Goon and LIJ start getting involved, going back and forth. Had a lot of shenanigans, but it's exactly what I want from two guys like this, from the respective groups that are known for shenanigans. Get the chairs involved. Suzuki is using the chair, but the ref grabs it from him. That sets up Evil hitting the SCO. This was quick, sprinty, back and forth. Had everything I wanted. That said, I'm not going to throw a bunch of stars at a match like that. This, even if I enjoy it, I can tell you that I liked it more than I thought it was a good match. I gave it 2¾ star.
Yeah, I went 3¾, so I liked it much more than you. I love the brawl to start. All the interference spots made sense and added a shitload of heat to the match. Had a real sense of urgency to the match. Worked like a hard-hitting sprint, which made it stand out because it was totally different than anything else on the tournament. That leads us to this match. Okada versus Kojima. What you make of it, brother?
Okada versus Kojima. Let's see. I gave it 3 stars. I thought that Okada did a really good job of making Kojima feel like a big deal here. I loved Okada taking it to Kojima to begin with. So bad that Tenzan has to come up into the ring and get in his fucking face about it. And I loved that spot. I thought it really, really put over the intensity of the match. I like there's a pretty brief heat segment on Kojima. He comes back with some of his lariats. But this is the point where I'm starting to see Kojima really doesn't bring much to these matches, but his token signature spots over and over again. But Okada does a great job of working around him, really making the machine gun chops in the corner as he kind of fights for the elbow drop coming out of it. He has to go back and to it a couple times for the drama to get to it. Big Brain Buster looks to just kill Okada, but he won't stay down. The crowd is cheering and going crazy for Okada. Liked Kojima a lot, ducking the Rainmaker to then hit a lariat of his own to the back of the neck. I thought that was fantastic. And then
wasn't that a great spot? I mean, that spot really stood out to me. And then I thought he kind of like prostituted a little bit, where then he ends up hitting a Rainmaker on Okada, you know?
Yeah, and I agree with you there.
Kind of lessened that spot where it made it. I thought I was like, wow, that's a great spot. And then he follows up with the actual Rainmaker. I'm like, eh, now you kind of prostituted that coolest of a trend of a counter that was.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it would have been a lot cooler if he had let that stand on its own as its own thing. Yeah, then he hits his own Rainmaker. The finish felt pretty clean, pretty clear that Okada was dominant, which, again, as I talk about the being the trope that Okada's matches have this very last-minute counter back-and-forth feel, this match didn't really feel like it had a lot of that. He hits the tombstone, hits the Rainmaker, puts him down. That said, I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought Okada did a fantastic job. Not anywhere near the same level, but in the same vein of the Tenryu match, where Okada just shows that he can take a legend who's got those nostalgia pops, those nostalgia spots, and he can really make them sing, peppering them in within his own match.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I gave it 3¾. I liked Okada's forearms to the neck. Love Okada going heel here. I mean, like some of his old school sensibilities here. He's like Michael Hayes. When the crowd's booing him, he starts covering his ears. I just loved it. I liked the Tenzan Okada interactions. I love Kojima using the Mongolian chops on his comeback. I love the counter to the first Rainmaker that you talked about and how the second one was prostituted. But man, all in all, I thought everything was excellent. And that leads us to Elgin and Kenny Omega. What you make of this one, man? I'm gonna let you, since I know you're gonna like it more than me.
These guys have phenomenal chemistry together. I think that they could pretty much work in their sleep together and have a pretty solid match.
See, I totally disagree. I don't know what it is. I didn't care. I thought their ladder match went way, way too long earlier in the year, or was that last? That was last year.
That was technically last year, yeah.
Yeah. I've had a lot of problems where a lot of people love their matches. I've never really dug them all that much.
Yeah, see, now, I think that they have good kind of together, like, chemistry together. They really definitely interact with each other, I think, solidly here. That said, I mean, there's obviously some issues here, but I think where they really shine is just some nasty, nasty spots with Omega taking some just gross abuse, belly to belly onto the floor. Obviously, that was pretty nasty. Elgin Bomb on the apron, another nasty spot. But what I really loved was Elgin kind of selling the rage that was building up in him, just having to deal with this fucker and the stuff that he's doing to him throughout the match. Love the kind of little details. Every time Elgin goes a little bit too fancy, he tries to go up top, he gets cut off. He tries to go for the slingshot splash, he gets cut off. That's a story that continuously gets told throughout the tournament and through every Elgin match in New Japan, really. So I like that it comes in here in a big way. Loved Okada's or Omega's dive to the floor. Then he's grabbing at the knee. Wish he wouldn't then always come right back from when he instantly starts selling the knee to always going for that V-trigger knee strike. He does it every goddamn time. It breaks down into just what feels like a real fight. As you said earlier, self-conscious epic. I can see it. But for me, I buy into it because the facials and the selling, I think, works. I didn't even mention Okada's facial selling as his eyes are rolling into the back of his head when he takes that belly-to-belly on the floor I mentioned. I really loved that. The teasing and working back and forth to build up to the Elgin Bomb on the apron, I think, took a spot that, you know, would drive Cornette crazy. Why would you do something so nutty? They really milked it and made it a big deal. So it's hard for me to shit on it because it's not like they just threw it out there as a throwaway spot. That said, Elgin, I mean, he does everything he can. He hits that pop-up Elgin Bomb, the Elgin Bomb into the turnbuckle, and then the revolving Elgin Bomb, only to not be able to put Omega down. So he dusts off that burning hammer that he has been teasing pretty much the whole tournament. He's been teasing for a long time in New Japan. He hits it here and instantly gets the pin. I gave it 3 3/4 star. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I wouldn't say it's a match of the year level match or anything, but I enjoyed it.
Fair enough. I give it 2 3/4. I liked early Elgin establishing the power moves. I liked when Kenny leapfrogged him. He really had some serious ups. But why would Omega stand with Elgin? That makes no sense whatsoever. We all know Elgin is the strongest man in New Japan Wrestling. If he's throwing forearms with you, nah, tag. No buys on my end. No bueno, no bueno. Nil, zilch, nine. I just don't understand that at all. And I haven't really found the match all that compelling. I thought they spammed almost every freaking finisher possible here. And they kicked out of way too many two counts. Didn't do it for me at all. 2 3/4. And that is the G1 so far, folks. We'll be back next week with some more. But man, it's getting there. Overall, I've been happy. I think we've had a pretty good G1. What about you, Timothy?
Yeah, I agree. I think that they've done a good job breaking it up because I think we're both kind of just getting hit with fatigue at this point. I guarantee the workers were also getting hit with fatigue, and then there was a little bit of a break at this spot. I mean, when you're listening to this, it probably was just G1 last night, but after this night, there was a couple days off from G1, so it gives you a chance to recharge your batteries. I've definitely enjoyed it. I've heard people shitting on the B block, saying it's the worst. It's very clearly worst of the two blocks, but I mean, for me, I think that both nights have kind of gone back and forth having good matches. I think I can't shit completely on the B block, what with having the kind of Juice Robinson matches that I've all really enjoyed, pretty much all of them, and a lot of good Okada matches as well. Maybe I'm getting them mixed up, but I think that's the way people have been going on this. That said, I've been enjoying it. The new guys, Zack Sabre Jr. and Juice Robinson, have really brought a lot to this tournament so far.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's good to see Juice, you know, break out. And same with Zach having a good one, too. You know, they don't, neither one of them have a snowball's chance of winning. It's cool to see him, you know, gives them more credibility later on in the years to come. Man, with that said, Timothy, you have anything you got to plug?
No, just same old, same old. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Dead.
Yeah, same thing. Follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Have a great week. I'm not sure if we'll be back next week because I'll be at Scenic City. We'll play by ear. If we are, hey, cool. If not, we'll be back there the following week. So keep on watching wrestling that you like. Laters. I think we'll fit it in next week. I'm just letting you know. It all depends on the G1s and stuff, you know. Hello?
Yeah, that's fine. Just let me know what you want to do. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if it does work, fantastic. But right. If you want to do an abbreviated G1 coverage because of that...
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh my perception.